everyone. So we're going to move from Bolivia, where you saw contraceptive prevalence rates changing over a 10 to 15 year period, to a very different setting and a very different approach in Afghanistan that has just come out of 23 years of warfare with virtually no infrastructure or health personnel that who are trained remaining. And I'd like to also make sure that I acknowledge my co-workers, Nika Saidi and Dr. Khalil Samadi, who are very instrumental in making this happen. So birth spacing is, in fact, the term that is more acceptable in Afghanistan, so that's why I'm using it here. We're going to be looking at contraceptive prevalence rates, same as in the previous paper, particularly relating to pills, condoms, and injectables, which were the three methods which could be delivered in rural areas by community health workers. So much of the rationale for doing this initiative with Hewlett Funds, which gave us Hewlett Foundation private funds, gave us a tremendous amount of flexibility, which is a delight at this stage, very unusual in our field in terms of seeing what might work and how to reduce maternal deaths, to identify the factors that could improve contraceptive use, to do some advocacy. And this was really experiential. We didn't know how much advocacy we would be doing, especially as a U.S.-based international organization, especially with religious leaders. However, the Minister of Health said, yes, religious leaders especially need advocacy, so go ahead. So we had a fairly clean slate on which to do some innovative exploratory kind of activities. And then obviously to try to document what we had accomplished, if anything, and to determine why that should be. One key point is that maternal mortality in Afghanistan is one of the highest in the world, at about 1,600 per 100,000 live births, and total fertility rate is also at the highest or next to the highest level, meaning that women have a 1 in 7, some data show 1 in 6 chance of dying in childbirth during their lifetime, absolutely the highest in the world. So helping women avoid unintended, undesired pregnancies is a key way to reduce this very large risk that women have, in addition to safe delivery issues, which would reduce the maternal mortality ratio. But the number of women dying can be influenced most strongly, according to some of our Afghan colleagues, by this measure, and we'll see how that might be playing out. One of the techniques we used was this notion of healthy timing and spacing of pregnancy, which WHO, USAID, and others now endorse, which basically means a woman should wait for 2 years after birth before trying to get pregnant again. This achieves about a 3-year birth space. So 36 plus months has now been looked at as more or less ideal in terms of achieving the best health outcomes for children the next pregnancy, as well as maternal health. And to achieve that, even in Afghanistan, one is going to need about 18 months or more of contraceptive use. And I put this point in here about starting fairly early with contraception, because even in Afghanistan, more than about 40% of women do not fully breastfeed up to 6 months. So many are vulnerable at 3, 4, 5 months for another short birth interval and higher morbidity for them and the next child. This is the way we conceptualized this for purposes of educating health professionals and others. The 3-year birth interval, trying to get across the point that this yellow area here is the area that you need, the woman needs contraceptive use, and also to continue breastfeeding during this time. And one of the reasons for pointing out this is it fits very well with the cultural practices, beliefs, and religion. This Afghanistan is the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. And the Holy Quran makes very explicit statements about the importance of breastfeeding for 2 full years. One of the mullahs in the project areas where we work pointed out to me that the Prophet Muhammad was 1,400 years ahead of the science in terms of identifying the importance of prolonged breastfeeding. And I sat there and said, yes, hard to argue with that. So the take-home point is that this fit very well with what mullahs were key to introducing contraception in this area understood. They all knew these sayings, and this fit perfectly well. so that there was a very nice synergy with the religious cultural background as well as the initiative for birth spacing. Here is the three project areas. We selected three project areas, small in this case, a total of 3,700 households that you can see down there at the bottom, which represents roughly 3,700 married fertile-aged women. So this was our denominator for looking at prevalence rates. Turmai is over in Herat near Iran, and it's a mixed ethnic group. Islam Kala is a Shiite area of Hazara people. And Farza is a Pashtun, a Sunni group that's also considered often to be one of the more reluctant groups in terms of adopting things like contraception. At least that was the overriding concern that many of our colleagues had. So we wanted to make sure that we included a Pashtun community in our work. So this is the organization. All of this was done under the Ministry of Public Health. The MSH Hewlett project on the left is the one I'm going to be talking about, reached the rural expansion of Afghanistan's community-based health program, was the large USAID-supported project, also implemented by Management Sciences for Health with Johns Hopkins, JAPIGO, and other partners. The MSH project had 1/200th the amount of resources as the REACH project. The REACH project was about $138 million over 3 years, the USAID's largest broad-based community health care program, again, relying a lot on community health workers and also community health posts to deliver basic services. And so this project was building on that basic foundation and platform. One of their goals was also to increase contraceptive prevalence rates. So the NGOs who we worked with had the same goal in terms of increasing contraceptive prevalence for this large, well-funded project as they had for our small little add-on to help them achieve better results along that line. One of the key points that we had to do early on, the resistance to contraception was not cultural, religious, so much as it was misconceptions. And we identified some serious, pervasive misconceptions that were very negative and represented huge barriers towards providers, much less the community, accepting and providing contraceptives. One of them, for example, is that pills and injectables will cause infertility. We don't want our women in the community to be infertile. We knew a woman who, you know, used pills and then she didn't have any more children. So we don't want that to happen here. And amenorrhea, no menses with injectables, was immediately interpreted not only by the community but also by the doctors and the midwives who hadn't had training in a long time as equaling the menopause. So the evidence, so far as they were concerned, is that these birth spacing would be a great idea, but these modern methods were not on. So we had a lot of work to do in that area, and doing it simply and directly was the name of the game with illiterate community health workers. Some of the innovations that we got permission to do was to allow the community health workers, CHWs, to give the first injection of Depo-Provera, and this was done with religious leaders and the community leaders' approval. We designed a very small brochure that gave the essential guidance on contraception for women and their husbands. Men are just as important as women in terms of the decision-making about use or non-use of contraception, as well as their concerns about the same side effects or misconceptions that would happen. Bleeding irregularities were a great concern to husbands, as well as amenorrhea and what that meant. So the same education information needed to be right across the board, and we did this for every household. I don't think I've put the cost data in later, but this turned out to be very cost efficient. With one piece of paper that described pills and injections, that cost 4 cents per household. So quite replicable even on a very low budget. We also did some other interesting things that helped the community health workers, like putting up a signpost on the home where the community health worker worked. And that was well received by them, and it helped the community understand where to get access. That cost $4 for health posts, which covered roughly about 1,000 to 1,500 population. So some kind of cost-efficient things could be done, and then there's some that aren't so cost-efficient, and that was much more the support for community health workers to bring them to a level of confidence and competence to give injectable contraceptives, to inform women, and to manage side effects. We looked at the contraceptive prevalence rate by a quite different technique than demographic and health surveys. This is an image of the community maps here on the floor. This man on the, to my left there is actually the senior mullah in this Pashtun area, who is right there at our side, seeing all that was being done and approving, and also educating the community on use of contraception. These community maps designated every household in the area that the community health worker was covering, usually about 100 to 150. And they had marks to indicate immunization status, pregnancy or not, as well as contraceptive use. So a variety of simple basic health indicators were documented on these community maps as the community health worker moved around and checked. So this served both as the denominator, the 100 households roughly, and then the numerator was the number of users, as current users as designated by the community health worker on her or his map. There were equal numbers of female and male community health workers. That was also first but really achieved by the Ministry of Public Health to have women community health workers. There was lots of concern about that, but it also worked well, and it was also absolutely necessary for women to talk to women about contraception. So here are the results in a quite short period of time. First, the 16 to 26, the longer line, over a two-year period, is the results from the Large Reach Project. And this covered about one-third of the country, about 8 million population out of Afghanistan's 23 to 26 million population. So an increase of contraceptive prevalence, modern methods, basically, from 16 to 26 is quite dramatic, very good progress. Most countries who are moving along nicely with increasing contraceptive prevalence move at a rate of about 1.5 to 2 CPR points per year. So 5 points per year is very good progress. And then the three areas where we had our pilot project in these smaller areas had these dramatic changes. The 9 to 34% contraceptive prevalence in 8 months at the bottom there, that's actually the Pashtun area and the hilly area where it was most conservative. And the other two areas also equally had about an increase of about 20 to 27 percentage points over 8 months with injectables, pills, and condoms. We also found fairly dramatic differences among the three in terms of the contraceptive mix, even in these three small areas. So here's in succession here the data for contraceptive method mix, and I've just highlighted what was sort of the more popular method and the biggest change that occurred in those 8 months. In this area, pills were initially the highest, and then it leaped up to a lot of condom users and quite a large increase in injection users as well. This is the Shia area in Ghazni. This area, unfortunately, is not safe, so we're not doing follow-up there. This is the area near Iran didn't realize that. Pill users actually didn't change much, but almost all the increase was in injectables in this area. Not much going on with condoms at all, unlike the previous area. And this, again, the prevalence is over here on the left. This is the absolute number. Fairly substantial increase in both pills and injectables, and not much at all going on with condoms. And we didn't have a means for really referral or delivering IUDs and permanent methods at this stage of the project, so it's not surprising that there wasn't much happening there. Now, I should give you just a brief comment about there's no reason in the world why you should believe these astonishing data, except that we wanted to make sure we believed them ourselves. So out of these 3,700 households in each of the three areas, we took 150 users, designated users, according to the community health maps from each of the 10 or 15 health maps, making sure we checked everyone. and had an independent household visit by a separate person, in most cases a midwife, who would ask if the woman, as it said, you know, are you really using oral contraceptives? If she said, yes, I am, then there was some probing questions to help verify that she was an actual user, such as, well, can you show me the packet of pills? If she didn't have the packet of pills, she wasn't a user. If she couldn't explain how to use them, really, she wasn't a user. She might have just been saying, you know, what she thought the midwife or the community health worker wanted to hear. And if she hadn't used any pills out of the packet, she wasn't. For the injectable users, it was much more straightforward because they had a card that showed when they got their last injection and when their next injection was due. She had the card, and she'd had an injection within 3 months. She was a user, absolutely. A little bit more tricky with condom users to verify that. I mention this because this is a considerably more rigorous ascertainment of is the woman a real current user than is commonly used done on the best surveys, such as DHS surveys. These probing questions usually aren't used. But we wanted to have confidence ourselves. So we made some minor adjustment factors in two and a major adjustment factor in the one where there were some real errors, not by the community health workers, but by the supervisor who was messing with the data. And we detected that. And so those figures that you see with these 24, 27 point increases are all the corrected data, corrected downwards. So, and we didn't look at non-users. There could have been errors there too. Some of them might have been users, but we didn't feel that was our major problem. I'm going to move on now so that we can go to the other presentations. This is a representation of some of the mullahs in the Herat area. This is a group of about 10 mullahs who said, when we chatted with them on the street here, that yes, contraception is important, birth spacing is important, but nobody has told us about these methods. So at that stage, you know, there wasn't a lot of resistance even among quite senior and conservative religious leaders. And you can read this quote, the way one religious leader conceptualized what the issues were in terms of how he understood the Quran, the importance of birth spacing, and then his advocacy. In fact, using the Friday prayers as a way of educating the community and talking about the importance of birth spacing and the use of modern contraceptives, pills, injections, condoms, and some of them were quite knowledgeable in terms of even addressing questions. Out of the 37 mullahs in the area who we had, and this wasn't an immediate kind of take, there was kind of extensive discussions based on the same misconceptions everyone else had. None of the 37 objected to our providing a more assertive, activist approach to contraception within the context of this broader integrated health program. And quite a number of them were actually advocates and were very helpful in encouraging the community and being leaders themselves. Certainly their concurrence was absolutely necessary for this kind of effort. So we learned a number of things. Correcting misinformation was paramount in this community. Simple brochures that were very cost efficient at 4 cents each, you know, were quite helpful. And community health workers, including those who were illiterate, could be very effective and helpful in increasing contraceptive use. The ethnic and cultural differences among them were not real barriers. Everyone, when we started out, internationals as well as Afghans, said, be very careful, this is a very sensitive area, and go slowly. So we didn't know what we were going to experience. But at the community level, the barriers weren't really there, depending on how you approached it in these traditional societies. I'm going to move to some of these other points, the necessity of religious leaders' concurrence, the 37 mullahs, and that this idea of 3 years of birth intervals fit very well with rural values as well as religious. The religious leaders approved these materials, and one point I didn't mention about the brochures was we included a quote from the Holy Quran at the top with regard to the importance for birth spacing. When Nika Saidi said, this would be a good idea, we're going to do that too, and we're going to put it in every household in the communities, something nobody else did before, and we didn't need to ask USAID approval, but we also needed to make sure we weren't going to get into trouble. And she said, no, we've already talked with the mullahs, and they said, this is fine. The mullah's concern was that since this has a quote from Holy Scripture, that it might fall on the floor or, you know, be used for trash, and that would be a desecration of the language. But it turned out that it was preserved because it did have a saying from the Holy Quran, and that women kept it in the home, and even those who were not literate, if they had questions about their method or some concerns about bleeding, amenorrhea for injectables, they could ask a neighbor or a child who was literate to read it at the time. And obviously husbands also had access to that same information. And that helped sort of do kind of an end run around the pervasive negative perceptions in the community and medical providers, since we just blanketed the area with correct and better information. Scaling up, resources are needed to implement some of these activities on a much wider scale. The Ministry of Health has decided that this project represents a best practice for Afghanistan. USAID has also agreed, and now they're in the process of helping implement and scale up several of the components of this initiative in the 13 provinces where USAID and MSH and Johns Hopkins, JAPIGO are currently working, with plans for next year to then scale up to the rest of the country. So we're very pleased about that. Miho Sato, who's with MSH, will be leaving for Afghanistan tomorrow, working with colleagues there in terms of some of the scale-up and how to take elements of this effort to be used much more widely with religious leaders in the community health program. Thank you.